Hello. The seatbelt check is around the corner.
You actually were telling the truth.
I do that quite a lot. Your people are always surprised.
Welcome aboard. Ladies and gentlemen, there may be some turbulence up ahead. Make sure your seatbelts are fastened.
To those guests who've just joined us, welcome.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Escape to the Magic Podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Ryan.
And I'm Dak.
And welcome back to another edition. This week we have an exciting topic. We think it's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's very exciting, actually. Josh Tomorrow, new CEO, about a month from now, will be taking over officially. And there are a lot of questions. What's he going to do?
Yeah, we talked about this last week. We kind of broke from our normal topic and jumped into the breaking news that was that Josh Tomorrow and Dana Waldron had been hired by Disney as their new CEO and CCO.
Dana what?
Is it Waldron? Did I say the wrong name?
Walden.
Walden, yeah, sorry.
It's all good.
My bad. Yeah, so we had talked about that last week. And so I guess this is a little bit more of a continuation, a little bit more of an in-depth topic.
And I want to give you credit too, because last week we actually have another episode prepared. And we teased it last week.
Did we?
in lieu of that, we did the big announcement that Josh Tomorrow was named the new CEO. And then like a couple of days ago, you're like, dude, we should totally do, if we were Josh Tomorrow, what would we do?
Yeah.
On day one, right? So the episode that we teased last week, it's still coming. It's just we're pushing it off another week.
Yeah, we delayed ourselves.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of news, do we have time for a quick mouse report of the week?
Of course.
Yeah. So this will time date stamp our episode a little bit, but we're early February now. So a couple of weeks ago, big cold front freeze came down through Florida. And so now what we're seeing is there's a lot of reports coming out at Disney World that a lot of the plant life. So this speaks to my heart.
I was about to say, you're probably shedding a little tear over this.
So a lot of the plant life at Disney World got hammered, especially in your tropical areas, right? So Adventureland has a lot of, you know, tropical types of plants, palm trees and different plants and so forth. Of course, the Polynesian parts of Animal Kingdom got hit really hard. And so it's just interesting now. I know this is hard to believe, but I follow a lot of plants at Disney World and plants at Disneyland sites and pages, as silly as that sounds. But yeah, a lot of people are chiming in about how Disney tried to do as best they could, but basically they're now in the process of cutting back all the dead stuff. And there's some palm trees when you go to the Polynesian and there's only like one little spike of, you know, palm coming out of the top of your palm tree. And so I would guess it's probably going to be a little bit of a different view for people for the next 3 to 4 months until these palms and plants have a chance to recover. And you know, Disney has the money to replace the really bad stuff. So hopefully it won't impact your visit if you have one coming up. Like I say, in the next 3 to 4 months, it won't impact your visit too much. But something to take note of is that, you know, Disney, man, they got hit hard with this.
Yeah, I saw a reel that Mariana, Florida had more snow to date than Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Like Mariana had like 1.5 inches of snow to Salt Lake's like 0.6 inch, something like that. Something crazy.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's crazy. And we've talked about your backyard on the podcast before.
Yeah.
So Dak's backyard is very much like the Polynesian. Palm trees, lots of floral, a beautiful, beautiful backyard. And we spent about 4 hours in his backyard trying to save his plants. And what, he had like 100-foot tarps back there. We were up on ladders and
it was to no avail, right? Yeah. Like at some point you just can't beat the cold when it comes to these delicate palm trees and tropical plants. So,
well, I mean, it was below freezing for some time, so.
Yeah. It was tough.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into our show topic here. So basically, we're calling this, what would you do if you were Josh? I guess that's a good enough title for our episode here. And we just kind of thought, like, What are some immediate things that Josh can do as the CEO to help Disney maybe earn some brownie points with fans and the board? That's probably the most important, and investors and so forth. So what is some things that Josh can put in place? What are some things he absolutely has to do, right? There's no question he has to get some things in order and kind of show his leadership as the new CEO. And then maybe we look out a little bit further of what are some long-term goals for Josh and the team at Disney, upper management team at Disney, and see what, you know, what we think maybe might be on the horizon when it comes to what Disney is going to look like in the next 3 to 4 years. Maybe.
Yeah. If I could just share my thoughts quickly on the whole shareholder thing. I used to work for a big company, corporation, Fortune 500. There is definitely, you definitely make decisions based on what shareholders are expecting, right? I don't know. And again, not having any knowledge whatsoever of the inner workings of Josh D'Amaro and his office, right? I don't know if that is going to be a huge concern of him up front. I think obviously it is. Don't get me wrong. Like, sure, you have to provide value back to the shareholders, but I think the difference between him and Bob Chapek is that we're not navigating COVID. Yeah, I think that was, as much as we rag on Chapek for, you know, the job that he did, he also entered at a very, very pivotal point. Just, it was almost a lose-lose situation for him. That time is gone. Josh has been groomed for the past probably 2.5 years, despite what media reports are saying that it was a, you know, 4 to 5 person race. I think Josh has always been the guy, if not in the back of Bob's mind, that, yeah, Josh is going to be the guy. We got to play the political game and pretend there are other candidates. Now, I think Dana would have been a good choice, but she doesn't have the park experience.
Yeah.
And I think the parks are the bread and butter right now, the Disney company. So I think addressing just the whole shareholder thing right now, I think it's important, but I think that he's got to do some other things first.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it's kind of goes back to the old, you know, Nick Saban mantra of like, trust the process, right?
So love trust the process.
Yeah. So if you trust what your game plan is and what you're going to do as the CEO, and you put a solid plan in place, then the shareholding, you know, stock prices and so forth will follow.
100%.
Yeah. So I think that's, you know, any good leader is going to tell you that. Trust the process and believe in yourself that the plan you have in place is going to be the right plan.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my first agenda item, I think, for Josh and Dana, is like, you got to get in that boardroom or that, you know, executive room, and you got to figure out real quick who's aligned with your philosophy and who's not. Right. I would not be surprised if over the next 3 to 6 months, we maybe see some shifting of leadership,
mm-hmm,
when it comes to upper management of Disney. And what that will tell me, I mean, again, I'm not a business, you know,
savant.
Yeah. But what I think, just from what I've experienced in my own personal life of mergers and acquisitions and different roles of leadership, is you have to have a team that's on board with you, and you're going to have to align as that, you know, executive leadership to make sure that everybody's on the same page and we're all moving in the same direction. If you have someone that's secretly fighting against you, I mean, we've all been, if you have worked any type of job, it seems like you've probably had a teammate or a coworker that has maybe not been on the same page as you, no matter what your roles are. And that makes it really hard and difficult to work with that person. And so I think being aligned as an executive room and all the presidents of each of their divisions and areas is probably job one for Josh. Is like, let's see who's yeah, in and who's
so,
out.
So along that line, so did you hear that, you know, part of Dana's, so she's the chief creative officer, and her background is television.
Yes.
But she is absolutely going to be involved with a lot of the parks decisions.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. Even though she has very little experience with that, I mean, creatively,
That's creatively?
Creatively. I'm an idiot. Creatively speaking.
Yeah.
I really am smart. I'm just, that was a horrible attempt at that word. Creatively. I did it again.
Creatively.
Creatively speaking, she, yeah, she's going to be rolling up her sleeves and getting involved with some of the decision making with, you know, park expansion and what happens within the parks. And I think that's going to be a very interesting. So to your point of like kind of addressing roles and boundaries within the corporation, we're already seeing that Dana is going to be in, have a say with how the parks run. And they haven't named Josh's successor yet for, I guess, technically chairman of Parks and Resorts.
Yeah.
I haven't heard, at least.
I have not heard either. I
haven't even heard any rumors about who that might be.
That's a good point.
So, but we'll see.
Yeah, that'll definitely be interesting to see how she helps transition that role. And I think that kind of brings us to another couple of bullet points that you and I talked about in our pre-show is one is Imagineering, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I would love to see, I don't know if this is, again, super high on the priority list, probably should be, but I would love to see Josh empower Imagineering to get back to their roots.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, those early, you know, Eisner and Frank Wells days of like, hey, we're not going to hide you guys in some back room where you can pump out one attraction or one, you know, thing a year. No, we want it. We want you guys full throttle, you know, opening up the floodgates and giving us everything you got when it comes to Imagineering. I think I would like to hope that that's Josh's mindset coming from such a heavy parks background, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, it's such an impossible task, in my opinion. It would be partially because we live in an instant gratification world. 30, 40 years ago, Imagineering, oh yeah, we've come up with this, you know, Big Thunder Mountain coaster. We've come up with Space Mountain. And at the time, those were revolutionary, right? And the world, the fans waited, I wouldn't say patiently, but they're like, this is this brand new thing that's coming out. We can't wait to see it. I think nowadays it's like, why is Disney taking so long to finish stuff?
Yeah.
Like this, it's 2026. Why are they taking so long to finish? You know, like they took 5 years to finish Tron.
Yeah.
When it took, what, 5 years to build all of Disneyland? Something like that. Yeah. Right. So, I think that's going to be a challenge, is appeasing the fans. Because it's going to take some time.
Right.
I mean, Imagineering is not, it's not a, you know, it's not a, how can I say this? It's not a quick
fix type
quick
of,
fix.
Yeah.
You know, you have to design it, you have to test it, you have to build it, and then you see what happens.
Yeah.
Right. So
I think a quick fix for Josh would be, you know, maybe lifting the reservations. So Disneyland is still on a reservation system, which is crazy.
It is
to
crazy.
Me.
Why are they still on a reservation system?
I don't understand that. I know, I think about a year and a half ago when Disney World had dropped their reservation system. Has it been that long? Somewhere in
at
there,
least.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the question came up, well, what about Disneyland? When are you going to drop your reservations? And the response back was, for right now, we're very happy with the reservation system because it helps us with planning, it helps us with organization, it helps us with management of our staff, management of our, you know, goods and services that we're providing on a day-to-day basis. And so the reservation system is an effective tool that we're using as Disney to manage park day-to-day operations, which I guess in a sense makes sense, right? But from a fan perspective, if you wanted to buy some brownie points or get in the good graces, if you will, of some fans and get some immediate like love, mm-hmm. I don't know that Josh is looking for that, but I think lifting the reservation system might go a long way for, you know, Disneylander fans and that community out there, because I think a lot of people feel the way our immediate reaction is. Why? Why are we still doing this?
It adds complexity to a to a situation that doesn't need it.
Yeah, I would agree. That's a great way of saying it.
Yeah, it's very simple. You go online, you buy your tickets, and you go to the park.
Yeah.
And we expect you, Disney, a company that makes literally hundreds of billions of dollars, to welcome us with open arms when we get there.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry if you overbuy for food on the days that we're there. That's just kind of what has always been the way.
Yeah.
For anybody traveling and vacationing to parks, to resorts, you show up and you expect to be entertained, you expect to be fed, you expect to sleep well. And we honestly don't care how you do it, just do it.
Yeah.
So I think removing the reservation system, I think, like you said, is a perfect way just to kind of give it a little bitty nugget.
Yeah, a little win for Disney Parks fans. One thing that I think that, you know, this is maybe on the opposite side, and maybe this will take us down a rabbit hole of discussion that I don't know if we want to go down or not, but we'll still go there, is I think we talked about this in the pre-show as well. I think if you polled 1,000 Disney park fans, what would you say their number one concern is? Like, if they did a survey, Disney's always throwing surveys at us. If they did a survey today and they polled 1,000 Disney fans, what do you think their number one concern is with the parks?
Pricing?
Yeah. Yeah. I think pricing, absolutely. If you check the message boards, the social media pages and all of those sites, right?
Hello, early 2000s.
Right. I think that's what the number one concern is for fans, is it's too expensive. And it is, right? It's very expensive. I think, in my opinion, I don't know, I don't have the data to support this, but in my opinion, the cost of going to Disney parks has outpaced our average income levels
very easily.
Yeah. And yeah. So I mean, and again, there's something to say about what you're getting for what you're paying for. I totally get that. But I guess my thought process on this is probably opposite of a lot of Disney fans. And that is that I don't think we're going to see any price changing.
You can't drop prices.
Yeah,
you can't. That's not, you've already raised them, dropping prices. I think you have to go back. And this is another common post that you'll see, is what can Josh bring back that's been taken away to add that value that you used to get when tickets were cheaper?
Yeah.
So I'll ask you that question. What are some of the things that, realistically speaking, I think we have our dreams and our wishes, but realistically speaking, what do you think Josh can bring back to make the park experiences better?
Boy, I don't know that he can bring anything back. And what I mean by that is, like, the first things that come to my mind is like lightning lanes. Well, they're not going to do that. They're not going to, I mean,
oh, that Premier Lightning Lane sells out nowadays. Yeah,
that is a money stream for them, and it's been a very successful money stream.
Yep.
As much as we yell and scream and complain about it as park goers, we're still ponying up the dough for it. So I don't think that's going away. I don't think other free services that we had before, like, for example, out in Disney World, Magical Express, I don't see that coming back at all.
You don't think so?
No.
That seems like another one of those, I mean, I don't want to say easy, but I don't know. It sounds like it would be kind of easy. It's just a bus service.
Yeah.
Right? You operate
thousands
of buses already on property.
I agree. I think that they have seen that that's a cost cut that they can make, and people have adjusted to it and figured out that, hey, I can just take an Uber or, you know, some other type of ride service to the parks and get there just as fast.
Yeah, but weren't you saying once, and I think it was you, it's like, if Disney can control from the time that you get off the airplane at MCO, they control you with the immersion into the magic, right?
Yes.
So from the time that you get on the bus, they take you to the resort, you're in the parks all day for your entire trip, you're in the bus on the way back, you're 100% immersed in the magic.
Yeah, look, you're preaching to the choir here. I love the Magical Express. I loved it. Like, every part about it, I loved. I didn't have to worry about, you know, getting my Google Maps out or my whatever to navigate myself to the parks. you know, as a pack mule dad is what I call myself, they would take care of all of my luggage and get it to the hotel for me. So, you know, from a customer service standpoint, I can't think of a better service that I like more than what the Magical Express gave to, you know, the Disney dads out there. Mm-hmm. It's just such a great service. That being said, I mean, and look, I would love for it to come back. I would use it all the time. But I just can't see them spending the money again to employ those bus drivers and, you know, get the buses operational and insured and all the expense that goes into a free service, right? Like, I mean, I understand you're paying more to stay at a Disney World resort, and maybe that build that into the cost, but I just can't, I don't know. I don't see that one coming back.
Yeah, you're probably right. You talked me out of it.
Well, I don't want to talk you out of it. I'm just saying that that's, to me, that's an expense that's probably really helped their budget line.
Yeah, it's just this whole, you know, repair perception of value that somehow, and this may not be on the radar of Josh, like, but I think it is. I think there is this perception of value. You started with the price of tickets. It's too expensive to go. And they've taken away perks. So if I'm Josh and I'm sitting on March 18th, I'm in the new CEO desk. How can I address this? I need to give something back. And like you said, maybe there's nothing he can give back. Maybe there's not.
I wonder if, I mean, there's no dollar sign that you can put on this.
Yeah.
I would say that another concern that a lot of park goers have is the quality of service and customer care that seemingly or appears to or feels like, or insert whatever description you want to give there, has dropped off a little bit, where the cast members maybe aren't as excited about working for Disney. They're just looking to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so for anyone, if it's just a job, right, then it means less to you. You may go to the, you know, employee training service, you know, classes and so forth, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it gets into your heart and your soul. Like it, I would say it feels like, or the perception is that for a long time, almost every cast member that you interacted with was a magical experience.
Oh, 100%.
As crazy 100%, as that sounds.
100%.
It feels like that is getting less and less, right? You're running into more cast members that are shorter, more direct, less friendly, less helpful. And so
that almost seems like the way of the world right now.
Yeah, I think so. And I think to be fair, you know, guests probably aren't helping that situation. You know, I think you're seeing a lot more rude guests in the parks lately, 100%. A lot more rowdy behavior.
Seems to be more fighting going on in the parks.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So I mean, again, I don't know how you put a dollar amount on this, but I think for a lot of people, if they leave their Disney vacation feeling like that was really special, I really felt like Disney cared about me, that may make up for some of these other perks that we're not getting anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. So can we move on?
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm
done there.
Okay. So I was thinking about this on the drive over here. When was the last time, actually, I think I may know the answer to this. I mean, this might not be a good question to ask you. When was the last time you saw a Disney animated feature in the movie theater? I think you just saw one, right?
No.
No?
No. In fact, we did not go see, what's the sequel that just came out?
Zootopia?
Zootopia 2.
Okay.
I've not seen it in the theaters. Honestly, because we just didn't know what we were going to get. So I would say, I think this is where you're going. And we kind of talked about this a little bit in our last episode last week is, you know, it feels like Disney has had a couple of bombs and Pixar has had a couple of bombs when it comes to animated shows, live action shows, you know, insert whatever Pixar movie you want to over the last four or five of them. I just saw an advertisement for a new one that's coming out that doesn't look great for Pixar. And so they have to right that ship.
So that's where I was going.
Yeah.
The last feature film animated that I saw was Frozen 2.
Wow.
In the theater.
Yeah.
And part of that, well, I don't want to blame it all on COVID, because COVID kind of took away the movie theater experience for a lot of us for a long time. But I also haven't found what they've been releasing to be like, I have to go see that in the theater.
Yeah.
If I'm Josh tomorrow, I'm sitting there. I was like, Dana, you are chief creativity officer. Man, I am struggling with that word tonight. Chief creative officer. You had the background in film and movies with Fox. We need to empower our animators, our storytellers to get back to original storytelling.
Yeah.
Like, they did it so great for almost 100 years. Like, what's happened? Now, with that said, Zootopia apparently is like amazing.
Yeah. I've heard, to defend Zootopia too, that's on me.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard numerous reports back that it's a great movie and needs to be seen. We just, again, we'd become so gun shy with some of the other movies that came out. We're like, well, you know, we take our three girls who are all teenagers now to the movies, and we like to go to those where you eat at the movie theaters.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're out at, you know, $150 easily by the time we get out of there with movie tickets and food and all that stuff. And so, again, we've just become a little gun shy when it comes to going to the movies, when it comes to Disney, until we know for sure how it's going to be. And so,
and on the flip side of that, my family, we went and saw Top Gun Maverick 5 times in the theater.
Yeah.
Like, it's possible. Now, I'm not trying to compare Maverick to Disney.
Yeah.
Like, watching, you know, F-18s fly around with surround sound is pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, but I think, again, it's like getting back to some of that. Just let's find some new stories to tell. I get that you want to capitalize as much as you can on the IP that works. I mean, Toy Story 5 is coming out next year. I'm like, I haven't even seen 4. I mean, 3 I thought was good. I thought 3 was a good ending. Haven't seen 4. I'm going to have to see it before I see 5. Let's get back to some original storytelling. I feel like that is something that if I were Josh, I would say, Dana, let's at least once a year, we need a major film project. And let's maybe get back to, and kind of teasing our next week's episode, let's get back to the risk aspect that Walt would always do. Walt was big into taking risks.
Yeah.
He would be like, Roy, we're doing this. Find a way to pay for it.
Yeah, 100%. So to go to your original question, I just looked up the last 4 Pixar movies. It would have been Inside Out 2. So Inside Out 2 was the last movie we probably saw in the theater.
And that was good. We didn't see it in the theater. We saw it at home, but I thought it was good.
Yeah. And so, again, I think there's some value there that, like, that's not what I'm trying to say. I think we're dead on here. Is like, Disney needs to get back to great storytelling, maybe taking a little bit of a risk in, you know, technology. Or that's the one thing I did read about Dana.
Oh, I know where you're going.
One of the things that she's been tasked with is, how can AI help us make movies?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a, you know, I don't know how you want to look at that. Is that scary? Is that, you know, crazy? But that's where the world is going, whether we want it to go there or not. You know, cue the Terminator music, but this is where we're heading.
Yeah.
Is some type of at least AI enhanced movie production.
I think AI is amazing. I think the animators, from what I read, I saw similar articles that, you know, AI is not necessarily going to replace actors. It's going to enhance. There's actually some agreements with like SAG and the Screen Actor Guild of America. Like, you can't just replace actors with AI, right?
Yeah.
But the people working on special effects, the animators, absolutely. I think they should be using AI to enhance the projects. If anything, to get them done quicker.
Yeah. And I think the thing is that, like, we're creatures of habit, right? This happens anytime new technology comes out, right? Like, you know, when we went from CDs and cassette tapes and all of that to digital music, people freaked out because they didn't know what that meant for musicians, right? And same with, like, if you want to talk about, you know, cartoons and actual drawings and those types of animators to, you know, computer animation and all of that, and how threatened, you know, actual animators were by that technology. It's cyclical, right? Yeah. Like, there's always going to be some type of new technology that comes along that people that are in those current roles fear because they are afraid it's going to take their job, mm-hmm. which I can understand that mindset. But once it's tested and proven, people realize, oh my gosh, this makes my life as an animator so much easier.
Oh yeah.
And, or, you know, as a musician, I'm able to capitalize on this, you know, streaming type of music and so forth. And so it just propels, mm-hmm. you know, the industry that much further forward. So I think that that's a good thing for Dana to be focused on is, you know, seeing how they can weave that into the studios, mm-hmm. for sure.
100%. I have one more.
Okay.
I would like Josh on March 18th to sit down with his notebook and write down, okay, we are going to announce a major e-ticket attraction in the parks every year.
Love it. Yeah.
I would say, and not like, okay, we're going to give Tokyo Disney one in 2026. We're going to give Disney World one in 20. I'm like, no. Each park gets their major attraction.
Yeah.
Right? Disney World, Disneyland. Yeah, if you want to alternate years, but keep it in the U.S., right? Tokyo, Shanghai, Paris. Everybody's getting one. That's probably not financially doable, but I think, and we do know that, was it years ago they came out, Iger came out and was like, yeah, we're investing $60 billion in the parks over the next 10 years, which is great. And we are seeing a lot of those projects come to fruition. I think we need to see more of it.
Yeah.
I think we 100% need to see expansions. I think Disney World needs a fifth gate. I think Disneyland needs expansion. I think, you know, Paris needs expansion. They all need expansions,
right?
They need updates, they need expansions, because the parks are the moneymaker. It's the bread and butter right now.
Yeah. And I think when they make these announcements, you know, obviously D23 is a huge thing, but it seems like that comes and goes. And then you get this trickle effect of other smaller micro announcements, which I understand they want to keep people engaged, but what really seems to get Disney fans excited is when you have these huge, you know, announcements that are coming out. And I think that invigorates people to be like, oh, okay, well then we're going to Paris in 2027 or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
I think that will infuse energy into the parks and get more people to go to them. So I'm 1,000% on board with that. Love it.
Is there an IP out there that Disney does not currently own that would get you excited if they were to purchase and say, we have purchased this, we are going to create a land with this IP. Maybe we'll make this.
this is our magical scenario
yeah, for the week.
Up, yeah. Finish up the episode here. Man, I've thought about this so much and it will never, ever happen, but it would be DC Comics.
Oh, so snap.
I'm a huge Superman fan. All of the DC world, right? And everybody that's in that, I mean, I could name probably 10 different superheroes and comic book heroes that I would love to see in Disney parks. But I think if somehow Disney could acquire DC or forge a relationship with them, that would be the next evolution.
That would be insane.
Yeah.
I don't know what Universal would do at that point. Because they have a lot altered of DC comics.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But that would be, I mean, that would be my main one. For me personally.
No, that'd be great. I would love to see Harry Potter. Again, oh, yeah. Never going to happen. I think Universal does a great job with Harry Potter.
Yeah.
But there's enough people out there that think Disney already owns Universal. already owns Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Let's just make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think you could build a fifth gate 100% around Harry Potter.
Yeah, absolutely. There's enough there.
Oh, there's seven movies original. You have Fantastic Beasts. You got this new series on HBO coming out. Yeah, there's tons of content there. So, anywho, well, hey,
yeah. Well, listen, done. We want to hear from you. What would you have Josh do if you're a Disney fan, Disney Parks fan? What would you love to see Josh do in the first 6 months of his tenureship, and then on out his 1 and 3 year plan, and maybe a 5 year plan? We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.